This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham.
At some point in your life, you've been part of a team, haven't you? And whether in sports or work or any dimension of group activity, you expect decisions to be made by your team leader. But what if you had no leader? Let's make it even more challenging. Not only does your team have no one in charge, you have to pull together a highly complex project, usually requiring many weeks' preparation, by next Tuesday. That pretty well sums up what's been going on for several years now during Renaissance season at the American Shakespeare Center. Performers come together and produce a series of theater extravaganzas with no director involved. Since they've been getting rave reviews, we figured there might be something here for all of us to learn about going leaderless. So we'll dive right into acting directorless right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The last time he was here, almost a year ago, Ralph Allen Cohen was telling us about how the celebrated theater company he co-founded was now using Shakespeare to teach leadership. People from all over the world, in business, in law, in government, even officers from the Royal British Navy, had been going to the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia, to learn how to become better leaders. Ironically, it turns out this particular Shakespeare Center has, for some years now, also been running what might sound to some like an anti-leadership program for several weeks every year, pulling together professional actors from across America, putting them into a highly compressed schedule, and challenging them to produce high-quality performances without anybody in charge. So we figured we ought to find out more. Ralph Allen Cohen, welcome back to the Insight Airwaves, sir.
It's great to be here, Tom. What a good intro to point out. Leader and team, it's a flip side of things. It really is.
Well, now we understand that Dr. Cohen is on an extremely tight schedule this afternoon. He's actually in Richmond today for a series of meetings, so he will only be with us for the first part of the hour. And soon, we are also going to be meeting up with some professional actors who have been involved in this unusual endeavor. But, Ralph, I understand you call this your Renaissance season. So please explain what that is, how you do it, why you do it, and what the results have been.
Well, we call it our actors' Renaissance season, in fact, because with the Renaissance here, the sort of rebirth of what Shakespeare did, was that the actors were the artists. There was no director, and it belongs to them. It's their work. And that's really key to what's so exciting about this season. Actors used to have all the agency that you get when you put on a show that was their show. And that sort of changed in the 19th century, largely for economic reasons, I guess. I think people who were investing in shows wanted to have somebody to blame. And that sort of grew until our model today, particularly because of movies, is that you have a Steven Spielberg or somebody like that who's in charge of the production, and it's his show. And you even say Spielberg's Lincoln or whatever is the show. Audiences are not used to the idea that the people that they are watching on the stage are a team who did it themselves, and that every choice they made themselves. And when you see that in the theater, it is a really different app. We started it partly because we have been devoted from the beginning to trying to find out, that, you know, taking Shakespeare seriously, not just as a writer, but also as a stagecraft person, a person of the theater, not looking down on their theater because it was so long ago. We started this off because it looked like a great opportunity to explore that, but also because we were making no money whatever from January through March, and so it looked like we couldn't lose anything. What if, we thought, we save ourselves some money on directors, take Tiffany Stern's ideas from her great book on rehearsals, and try them out. Now, what would happen, we'd save some money, we wouldn't have to endanger big houses because we weren't getting any in the winter. And so we assembled the first group, including Miriam, who's there with you today, and we said, put these three shows on, and put them on in, around 30 hours each, and then we kind of got out of the way. what we learned was that that was too little work for them, and so we added two plays. And so now they put together five plays and have about 30 hours to prepare each one. And, you know, I've got to tell you, the room is just a different place when they're doing it. It's just wonderful. Miriam can tell you that that first time was a tough slug through things because a lot of people weren't used to exactly what you were saying, Tom. You know, the idea, we don't have anybody here, so who's going to be the leader, became an issue. And how much talking do we do before we just get right to it?
Well, also with us here in the Insight Studio is a former Shakespearean actress, former high school teacher, and now director of education for the Stanton-based American Shakespeare Center, Sarah Enloe.
Hi, welcome. Tom. Thanks.
And with us, two professional actors with many years' experience on stage at the American Shakespeare Center's Blackfriars Theater, as well as on other stages across the country, Miriam Burrows and Ben Kearns. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Well, Miriam, since Ralph Allen Cohn was picking on you, let me pick on you some. When I said it at the open that imagine being put together in a team doing a highly complex project that normally would take weeks or months to put together and you have to have it ready by next Tuesday. What would be more accurate from what Ralph was describing in your first experience is start now and have it ready before midnight tomorrow.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was very confusing. And it's funny, you know, you said who's going to, without trying to do this kind of project without a leader, without somebody who's, you know, at the helm. And it seemed to me that first year there were many people who wanted to be at the helm and many people who felt that their decisions were the ones to, you know, to follow. And
these were other actors?
Other actors, yeah. You know, there were certain actors that had experience directing and felt as though, you know, that if they just kept an eye on the whole project, that everything would be all right, but it certainly wasn't their place. And so there was interesting little pieces of resentment and again, conversations that were not necessary when there was work to be done. So it seemed to me that that very first year, in trying to figure out how to do this thing, the answer seemed to be to do it and to stop talking about it. So that was the big, you know, and so Ralph said there wasn't that three shows in that amount of time. You know, we decided that they needed more to do it. There was too much time for these folks. And a lot of that time was spent talking. And it's amazing that in adding, as the years went by, as we went through the years doing this, the Renaissance season, we added more shows. And it did seem as though the answer was if they had less time to spend talking, we would get to the doing faster. And it was a much better situation.
Time was taken away, too. So you guys had, week of rehearsal in 2005 for Taming of the Shrew. And then by last year, you had 2.5 days before your first dress rehearsal for
Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah, for Much Ado. Yeah.
Which we started doing with the midsummer year. So it was
2009.
So it was the third time we did the Ren season. We cut down the rehearsal time for the first show to
two days.
Yeah, and again, that goes to what Ralph was saying earlier about, you know, coming from a sort of financial concern was that new year coming out of the calendar year of 2008 was a rough time for everyone.
It was.
And Blackfriars was certainly included on that. So I think that whole idea, as crazy and artistically challenging as it was, I think it also came in a way of like, we need to get this show open immediately. Like we, you know, so they picked a very popular title, Midsummer Night's Dream, and tried to get it open and, you know, open the door so people could come and start watching it immediately. And that was, you know, for us, because, you know, Miriam and I had done a bunch of Renaissance seasons already. So to, you know, and it was already crazy. Like I didn't think it would get crazier than trying to put up Hamlet in 10 days, but you know, putting up.
But opening a show tomorrow night, there's an audience going to be here. Shake hands, everybody. You know, this is the new company. You're going to be performing this tomorrow night.
And Ralph Allen Cohn, you framed this as if there wasn't much to lose because you were starting this at a time of year where in the wintertime there were not big audiences coming out. You had the advantage of not having to pay a director. But the obvious question is, what were audience responses early on like?
It's almost unbelievable if you look at a chart. We had a 70% increase in audience in the first year. Now, some of that was, you know, curiosity seekers. Now, March is our second best month, not including Christmas shows. It's our second best month because by that time all the shows are up, and people all over the country know about this and they come to see it. So it is a really exciting thing to be around in March. Audiences love it. Something's different in the room. And one of the things I think is kind of interesting, we knew already going in that the Shakespeare's Company, they used to charge twice as much for opening night, and we couldn't figure out why. Well, it turns out that everybody wants to be there. I don't know if it's a sort of NASCAR thing to look
at. Who's going to crash?
But it may be a little of that, but the actors will tell you that first night, audiences are so excited to try to help out, you know, in a way, to be there if someone goes up on a line and they figure a cute way out of their having forgotten it or a good way to ask for the line. In that moment, the audience is 100% behind them on those opening nights. And the room is great. It's wonderful. It's a different kind of experience, I think, from the polished, everything is set, and one person is responsible model, and it's a little bit more like watching a sports event.
From the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia, we are speaking with Ralph Allen Cohen, who's only going to be with us for a couple minutes more. He's co-founder of that center, as well as Sarah Enlow, Ben Kearns, and Miriam Burrows. If you have a question or comment for him, for any of them, you can reach us at 888-WMRA-TALK. And all numbers, 888-967-2825. Sarah Enlow, you came to the American Shakespeare Center to work there after this, what some people would think of as crazy thing called the Actors Renaissance season, had already gotten underway.
True.
But you also, before you got there, wrote a paper about what they were doing?
Actually, I studied at Mary Baldwin College in their Shakespeare and Performance Masters of Fine Arts. And one of the things that I had to do for my final project was dramaturg the 2008 season, in which Ben played Macbeth and lots and lots and lots of other roles. And so I dramaturged that season. And then I also had to complete a paper for a Shakespeare Association of America seminar. And in that paper, I decided to do research on our Actors Renaissance season and to present it to my colleagues at the association. So, I did.
And by this point in time, you had done some Shakespeare as an actor yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You had taught Shakespeare as a high school teacher. What was your impression of this idea of throwing these people together without a leader, giving them a very short time frame and saying, do it?
My impression was twofold, actually. When I came to get my master's in Shakespeare and Performance, I came as a directing student. And Ralph Allen Cohen, on the first day of our classes, said, "We've just done the most exciting thing. We've gotten rid of the director." And I said, "Wow. Okay, great." So I started looking into what that was all about. And it's truly a fascinating process. And if anyone is interested in reading work on it, Tiffany Stern's Rehearsal from Shakespeare to Sheridan, Making Shakespeare, a lot of different things go into great detail about how Shakespeare's Company worked. But I also saw a lot of amazing opportunities for education within the processes that we were talking about.
I'm going to ask you more about that, but I know that Ralph has to leave us in about 30 seconds as he goes on to these other meetings he's at the State Capitol today. Want to leave us with a final thought about going leaderless, Ralph Allen Cohen?
Yeah, it would simply be this, that, you know, a great leader always knows how to sort of lead as part of a team anyway. And so I think great teamwork, you know, one thing that we haven't said is these weren't just any actors. These were among our best. They knew their stuff. You get a good team together and you're going to get 12. If you have 12 actors, you're going to have a show with 12 times as many great ideas.
Ralph Allen Cohen, co-founder of the American Shakespeare Center. Thanks so much for your time, Ralph. We're going to talk with your colleagues more here in just about 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. To you listening in, have you ever been on stage? Did you work with a director? What was that experience like? Can you imagine how it might have been different if there had been no director in charge? We've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or on Facebook, if you'd rather post to us, we are listed there as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Sarah Enlow is Director of Education at the American Shakespeare Center.
Hey there.
Professional actors Miriam Burrows and Ben Kearns have appeared on stage at the center's Blackfriars Theater many, 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 many times, including during their Renaissance season when they go directorless. I'm sorry, I didn't want to make you sound like you're each 100 years old. And although I still think of you, Miriam, as a professional actress, the fact is that you sort of semi-retired for a while.
I have.
Your last time on stage was earlier this year when you were 8 months pregnant.
That's correct.
And you're no longer pregnant. So
I am not.
You're a mom now.
I have a sweet little boy named Clark.
And he's 6 months old.
He's 6 months old. But and I was playing opposite this sexy gentleman to my left in Much Ado About Nothing.
And you were
Beatrice,
and he was
Benedict.
And there's an opening scene that the two of you are willing to give us a sample of?
Sure, sure.
I wonder that you will still be talking, Signor Benedict. Nobody marks you.
What, my dear Lady Disdain? Are you yet living?
Is it possible Disdain should die while she hath such meat food to feed it as Signor Benedict? Courtesy itself must convert to disdain if you come in her presence.
Then is courtesy a turncoat. But it is certain I am loved of all ladies, only you excepted, and I would I could find in my heart that I had not a hard heart, for truly I love none.
A dear happiness to women. They would else have been troubled with a pernicious suitor. I thank God and my cold blood I am of your humor for that. I had rather hear my dog bark at a crow than a man swear he loves me.
God keep your ladyship still in that mind, so some gentleman or other may scape a predestinate scratched face.
Scratching could not make it worse, and 'twere such a face as yours were.
Well, you are a rare parrot, teacher.
A bird of my tongue is better than a beast of yours.
I would my horse had the speed of your tongue and so good a continuer, but keep your way, a God's name. I have done.
You always end with a jade's trick. I know you of old.
I wish we had the applause tape ready. Miriam Burrows and Ben Kearns.
It's very interesting to do that scene and not have you be 8 months pregnant. You know, what's funny, Miriam and I were working together on a production of Importance of Being Earnest previous to this season. And we were playing opposite each other. She was playing Cecily. I was playing Algernon. And we had this whole scene where the two of us kind of stood in a corner and didn't say very much for a long time. And, you know, we were always kind of flirty with each other throughout the production. And at one point in a production one night, performance, she grabs onto my hand, and it was a hard, you know, I'm like, that's not a flirty hold of the hand. I'm like, what are you doing? And I just kind of, I leaned down and I said, just quiet enough so she could hear, but nobody in the audience. I said, are you okay? She says, don't let go of me. And she had not told anybody that she was pregnant yet. So I was just holding on to her. I thought, you know, maybe she was having a stroke or something. I didn't know. And then, you know, we finished the performance. We did a talk back with our audience afterwards. And then I was getting out of costume afterwards, and she came into the dressing room. She shut the door and she says, okay, I have to tell you, since this happened tonight, you know, I'm pregnant. I said, oh, congratulations. I'm so happy for you. I give her a kiss, give her a big hug. She says, so thanks for helping me out. I was like, oh, of course. Good for you. Good for you. She walks out of the room and I said, hey, wait a minute. How pregnant are you going to be when we play Beatrice and Benedict? And she said, really pregnant. And she was. And she was great. And I have to give Miriam a lot of credit. She did not complain but a once. And she had every reason to. And she was just such a workhorse that whole season. It was great.
So this incredibly famous play, Much Ado About Nothing, where you two have the leads, this was the latest example of a performance done during the actor's Renaissance mm-hmm. season at Blackfriars Theater in Stanton, part of the American Shakespeare Center there. And you threw this together how fast?
We had an audience the second evening, yes, no?
No. It was, even a dress we started on, audience? I think we rehearsed Tuesday, Wednesday, and half of Thursday.
Okay.
Did a half day on Thursday, and then we had an audience that Thursday night.
Do you have to have actors who already know these plays so well that they pretty much know the lines? Or do you learn the lines in less than 2 days?
No, you have to know your lines before you start. And ASC sort of operates under that principle for all of the seasons that they do. They really, you know, their philosophy is that you can do no work on the play if you're holding your script in your hand, because then you're a person reading. But if you have the lines in your head, then you can actually figure out what you'd like to do. But in a 2.5 day rehearsal, that's huge. You know, if somebody doesn't know the lines, that's going to really gum up the works in a big, bad way.
I don't want to mess you up by asking you to do math here, but I am curious if you have some idea by the time that you did this, which was Miriam's last performance at Blackfriars before she gave birth. And who knows how long it's going to be before you're back on stage.
Mm-hmm.
By the time that you did this particular episode of the most current Renaissance season, how many times, how many performances or different plays had you done without a director? Do you have any idea?
Oh, plays would be
one, easier. 2, 3 for you, then 4 in 2006, then 4 in 2007. You were not there in 2008. So that's what's the math? 8, 11 plus 5, 5, 5.
Yeah.
So you've done 26?
It was about, 23 plays.
So for each of you, a couple of dozen times.
Yes.
You had been involved in this effort.
Yes.
Of putting on performances without a director.
Yes.
So by the time you did it this last time, it was something fairly easy to do?
I kind of. Well, I understand. Yeah, you go into it understanding what needs to happen and who you need to work with, and there's certain questions that have been answered. I don't need to worry about your scenes and this is, you know, you show up for day one and say, this is what I'm wearing and this is what I see happening. Benjamin and I had he pulled me into the basement and said, let's work on this scene a couple of times, and you know.
That sounds so creepy. Pulled you into the basement. It should be noted that our rehearsal space is in the basement.
Yeah. Well, you have both been professional actors for much of your adult lives. Although, Miriam, I understand there was a time when you worked as a legal secretary on the West Coast. But I'm curious if this experience of this kind of teamwork, especially as Miriam was pointing out earlier, where there can be some sensitive egos, personalities involved.
I would say always.
there are always
egos involved.
If you
care about it, you're going to be sensitive. And it's that can be a very good thing.
But do you have a sense of whether this idea of teamwork without a team leader can translate in any way to things outside of theater?
Absolutely. Because I think, you know, if leaders emerge in the season, I think that it, you know, Miriam can argue if she sees things differently. But to me, leaders emerge based on preparedness. And I feel like that can be, you know, a baseball team or, you know, a guy running a restaurant. You know, the more prepared you are and the more you are sort of foreseeing potential problems and having solutions to those problems in your back pocket, people will tend to, you know, we have a saying in the Renaissance season where we say, the idea that you have is better than the idea that I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a plan, chances are the cast is going to follow you through that plan. Now, it can get a little hairy when you say, well, I understand you have a plan, but I also have prepared a plan and it's vastly different from yours. So then you can sort of, you know, talk about compromise, and you can, you know, try to do it both ways and see what responds with audiences, or first really see what responds with the performers. And then what's great about the Actors Renaissance season is that you can see how it plays to the audience. So, I mean, you could go out and do the scene, you know, having prepared it in one way. And if you're finding that you're not getting the responses that you want, you can grab those actors you know, whenever you can find time, rework the scene and go out the very next night and do it completely differently, because precisely because you have no one to answer to except your audiences and your scene partners. I mean, to me, it's all about, you know, it's about preparedness and it's about your passion for your work. And people, you know, people always notice it.
Miriam, any translations you see into the lives of people who might never appear on stage?
I do kind of feel like it would be a situation where you know, if you were to go to work and your boss says, I'm going to be, you know, be gone for 3 months, but these things still need to happen. You know, work still needs to be done. I think it challenges employees. I think it challenges people personally to step up and see what kind of work ethic they have. And I think it challenges your integrity as a person and as a worker. I think it translates to just about anything.
Tell me about that. Challenges your integrity.
I think that goes back to what Benjamin was saying about preparedness. You need to go into your... You need to have a plan. You know, you're personally responsible every day. In the Actors Renaissance season, you know, you are personally responsible to the people you are working with and to your audience to tell a story and to get that work done. So if it were a different situation and you're in an office, I think it's the same thing. You know, you have at the end of the day, there are things that need to be done. And just because you don't have a boss telling you to do it doesn't mean that it doesn't have to get done.
It's a very transparent way of working. I mean, you will immediately know if someone comes into the rehearsal room without their lines and without their preparedness taken care of. And so
this is Sarah Enlow.
Everybody owes everybody an allegiance or an amount of work that makes 12 people equally responsible to one another and to the audience, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. But we've also taken a lot of the lessons that you guys have taught us out and use them in other programs. And in our leadership programming, we use Miriam helped us coach this last April with a group that was in for a week. And we were taking things that we directly learned about how leaders come out of a situation in the Renaissance season. We've also had leadership groups visit us and just observe some rehearsals and then discuss, look at what happened, who was leading in this moment and how did the leadership then change hands to the next moment? And what is that flow of power like, and how do they negotiate that with one another? And it is about a gentle touch often. It's about presenting a great idea, trying on different things. When I watched Ben and his colleagues put up Macbeth in 2008, I was very conscious of a piece of the puzzle that hadn't been studied yet, which is how many times are they going to go through this each scene before they decide on something? And it ended up being about 3 times. You try it 3 different ways. Sometimes you'd go back to the very first way. Sometimes you'd go to a completely different way. That whole running up the stairs and across for Duncan's death. And then in the last minute, Ben was like, you know, I don't need to do that. I can do the way it is, and it's fine. So watching those negotiations and people taking ownership and being transparent in their responsibilities to one another is a really remarkable thing that is worth study.
Mm-hmm. To you on the other side of your radio, how important is teamwork in your view? Do you see any relationship between what we've been hearing about the Actors' Renaissance seasons at Blackfriars Theater and other kinds of teamwork? You're welcome to join our conversation by calling us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Ben Kearns, in looking at how this works, and again, we have to say that you guys for years now have been getting rave reviews from audiences and from critics for these performances that you're putting on. So apparently you're doing something right. Is there anything that you take away from these experiences about how human beings interact with each other and how they more successfully can work together? Or can you just give us an example of a challenging circumstance and how that challenge was met?
Those are good questions.
Well, if you want to think for a bit, Miriam will rescue you.
I do think that the thing that you take away is there's sort of two things. One is that for as much as we've been talking about, you know, what a challenge it is, it's incredibly empowering precisely because of what Miriam was talking about before, about, you know, your responsibilities to your audience and to your fellow cast members. But, you know, if you can look at that not as a challenge, but as an opportunity, or simultaneously, you know, you can do both of those things, you know, and for those of us who are, you know, actors, you know, to play somebody like Macbeth or Hamlet is a dream, you know, and, you know, it's a dream to play those parts. And if there is no director there to help you through, well, you know, my philosophy has always been like, you better work really hard to give no one any kind of cause to complain about your performance. You know, mm-hmm. there's nobody there to help you. Mm-hmm. Now, I've enlisted the help of my fellow actors on many occasions. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll ask them to come and watch scenes and speeches that I'm doing and ask for feedback or ask for advice. But what I like to be able to do in a session like that is to be able to come in and say what I think is important about this part, or what I think is important about this speech, or what I really want the audience to take away is this. And I feel like, and this is probably the best way to answer your question, having worked without a director, I think makes you a better actor working with a director, because then you wind up training yourself to not just come in as a blank slate and say, I'm here to just, you know, do whatever you want. It's like you come in and you say, no, I feel very passionately about what I'd like to do with this character and what I think the audience should take away from this story. And now the director might not always agree with you, but I think any good director will respect an actor who comes in and cares so much about their work. So I think for us, that's been, you know, in a way that's a blessing and a curse, because sometimes you're like, what do you mean I don't get to do exactly what I want to
do?
What do you mean I've got to, tone this down or whatever? But, yeah, I mean, I think that, and I, in combination with performing as much as we do, you cannot help but become a better and better actor every time you do it.
Miriam?
Sorry, what was the question? I just remember thinking, you really have to learn how to pick your battles when you're working like this. You know, you can't win every battle, and you can't always be the person stabbing your. I remember crying a lot in my first season, frustrated and.
Looking back to those years when you were on the West Coast working in a law office as a legal secretary, can you think?
I cried then too.
To the lessons that you've learned about not having a boss to report to on stage, and how you would have applied that in a professional workplace any differently?
Oh, God. I feel like theater people make the best employees because their work ethic is so amazing, because you don't get to call in sick. And I found that I applied my work ethic every day, and I think I was a very valued employee on the West Coast because of that.
Sarah Enloe, I can see by the look on your face you have some thoughts about this as well. So we're going to continue our conversation here based on what's been going on for some 7 years now, the Actors Renaissance season at the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, where they go leaderless several months a year. But we're also applying that to the rest of our lives, too, and we'll continue in 1 minute. Growing up near Binghamton, New York, Ben Kearns always knew he loved being on stage, but it never really occurred to him that he could make a career out of it until a friend invited him to do some dinner theater work in Wytheville, Virginia. That was some 12 years ago. Ben's been making a living in theater ever since. New Jersey was theater launching ground for Miriam Burroughs.
Whoop, whoop.
That was her home area, where her father, mother, and two older sisters were all involved in community theater. Miriam played her first role on stage at the age of 3. She was a bit older than that when she first started working with the American Shakespeare Center back in 1999. Sarah Enlow used to teach high school in a small town outside of Austin, Texas. But after winning a Teacher of the Year award, she was given a scholarship to study at a Shakespeare summer program in New England. And eventually that led to the role of Director of Education at the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Call in phone number 888-WMRA-TALK. How about another scene, guys? You each have monologues?
I have a little something that Ben might help me out with.
Sure.
See, you're not used to being close to a microphone, are you?
I'm not. I hate it. Very intimidated.
Just go ahead and be close to
all
the microphone. Because
at
you've
the
got
Black
this
Fires.
Beautiful voice, and we want to make sure people can hear it.
Do you want to intro this at all, or do you just want to go?
This is from Twelfth Night.
Part of the Actors Renaissance season.
2010.
Yeah. And what roles do we have here?
I played Viola in that season.
I played Toby Belch in that season, but I will be playing the much handsomer Diego Garcia.
So do we need any setup or background for what's going on here?
Viola is right now dressed as a boy serving the Duke Orsino, who she is in love with. But she's in boy's clothing. So,
do you want me to say 1, 2, 3, go?
No.
No, I'll just say, what dost thou know?
Too well what love women to men may owe. In faith they are as true of heart as we. My father had a daughter, loved a man as it might be. Perhaps were I a woman, I should your lordship.
And what's her history?
A blank, my lord. She never told her love, but let concealment like a worm in the bud feed on her damask cheek. She pined in thought. And with a green and yellow melancholy, she sat like patience on a monument, smiling at grief. Was not this love indeed? We men may say more, swear more, but indeed our shows are more than will, for still we prove much in our vows, but little in our love.
And this is where the applause comes in.
Yeah, that was pretty... Uh-huh. Is that the same scene? See, like, this is what I'm talking about with Actors Renaissance season. You know, I don't know how many productions of Twelfth Night. Is this the same scene where mm-hmm. there was then a swing dance?
A
with...
little jitterbug. Yeah, you know? Yeah. And it was beautiful and touching.
It was so lovely. It was really, very sweet. And, you know, it brought in, you know, music is, you know, so integral to that whole play. And it was so great to just, like, have that.
I've been thinking about that a lot, actually. The actors at the ASC also do a lot of music together. And to talk about teamwork, I think there is such a very smooth translation between working on the music together as a team and then going downstairs, because our music is often in the balcony, and going downstairs to put a Shakespeare play together. I often feel like that communication is... I don't want to say a warm-up, like an exercise, like an everyday exercise where we get to play music together and then go do Shakespeare together. I just think it's an awesome and smooth transition.
Well, and that's an interesting thing we haven't mentioned about the Actors Renaissance season, I don't think, is that everyone who's in that season has worked for the company before. And so when you were talking earlier about the first one, mm-hmm. that was everyone's first time. Mm-hmm. But every season, a couple of people who are new to the season will come in and have to find their way around,
right.
though they've worked at the Playhouse before. But that strength of bonding in both working in a regular season, but also in the music that you guys produce, seems like it feeds the process, it feeds the team, mm-hmm. and gives a little juice to the whole experience. Because, you know, you are not only putting up a Shakespeare play, you're, by the end of the season, creating 5 hours worth of music.
Yep.
One of the things that strikes me is that, and maybe it's like an unfair myth, but most of us have heard stories about actors being some of the most difficult people in the world to get along with, because there's so much ego and so much charged personality. And even you, Miriam, have referred to the fact that everybody on stage kind of has to have an ego if they're going to do their job right.
So I'm just kind of curious about your sense of if you can get people with this kind of reputation all working together without a leader, does that say something real hopeful for the rest of us? Or are we overplaying the degree to which actors are difficult people to begin with? Ask an actor.
I think that belief, I think it's all wrapped up in the issue of money. And I think that actors become difficult to work with when they start to believe, or when they have people in their entourage leading them to believe, that they are responsible for making a lot of people a lot of money. And if they believe that about themselves, well, then they become more demanding about, you know, what have you, whatever it is that they can think of, because they feel like they deserve more because so many people are getting rich off of their likeness or their face, or they're putting, you know, butts in seats. And I just don't think that that's happening, none of us are millionaires and none of us are making anybody millionaires, at least at this point. So for us, you know, the juice is in the work, or at least, I hope it is.
Can you talk, Ben Kearns, about what you love about acting? I mean, we can give away, I think, that you didn't think you were going to be making a career out of this. You actually got a degree in history and education, and were teaching history in high school in upstate New York for a while before you started doing some professional dinner theater in Southern Virginia. And is it true to say that after that, after you stopped teaching for a while and did the professional acting, that you just felt you couldn't do anything else, that theater was what you had to do?
I don't think I would starve, you know, if I couldn't work in the theater, but I know that I would always be distracted, I think is the best way to put it. You know, like I could get a job doing something else, but I would always be thinking
because you'd be yearning to be on stage.
Sure. Or involved in it in some way, you know, like directing a play or playing an instrument for a production like that. You know, I just think it's one of the few things that's left anymore where you get a group of people together to share an experience. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just not too much. I mean, people don't even shop in stores anymore. You know, they buy everything, you know, online. And
but let's talk about you. Let's talk about what you experience, what you feel, what that sense of joy is when you're on stage.
Well, that has a lot to do with it. I mean, that's the thing in that, I said to a woman from our office the other day, I said, we did a high school matinee of a performance of Merchant of Venice a couple of weeks ago. And I was, I was significantly moved by what was going on. I mean, it's a very dicey story to do. And, you know, there's a lot of, controversial stuff or whatever, but you look out in that house and the high school matinees are always a riot because, you know, whatever our capacity is, you know, we tend to overflow because we bust all these kids get bussed in and there. And to walk out on stage and to know, I mean, not to think, but to know that most of these kids have never seen a live performance before. Some of them have been able to see this through grants from, you know, NEA or NEH or something like that. But to look out into the house because our lights are on the audience, and you see all different colors of kids, all genders, different ages. You see, you know, people with yarmulkes on. You see people with turbans on. You see, I mean, it truly is the American Shakespeare Center. It's this huge melting pot mix of people. And they went crazy for that play. Mm-hmm. They laughed in all the right places. We did this matinee, you know, there's this poor at the end where Portia is really raking Bassanio over the coals about giving away this ring that she gave him. And she repeats the word, the ring, the ring, the ring. And I'm telling you, by the end of the show, the audience, these kids are saying the words, the ring, along with her. It was like being at a rock concert, but they knew the lyrics, you know what I mean? To this Shakespeare thing, you know, and you look out and you're like, if I saw you on the street, I did not think that you would enjoy a period dress Merchant of Venice at 10:30 a.m.
Right.
But they went nuts for it. Yep. And like, to me, to be able to compete with whatever they're seeing on television or whatever, you know, sporting events they're going to see, like, that's huge. And to know that they're going to take their bus ride home and discuss what they saw and to talk about how they felt about the story and the themes that are being expressed in that thing, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Professional actors Ben Kearns and Miriam Burroughs, who have both appeared many times on stage at the American Shakespeare Center's Blackfriars Theater in Stanton, Virginia, are two of our guests. Sitting next to them, Sarah Enloe, who is the center's director of education. Miriam, it was mentioned earlier that you were on stage starting as a toddler.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk at all about what is in that joy for you?
Benjamin was just talking about performing for high school kids, and I was sitting next to him nodding because I agree. There's nothing like I think the high school audiences give me the best feeling when I leave that theater. It is an amazing experience to look into the eyes of 12 to 14 year old kids who are more concerned about what they look like to the boy next to them at the beginning of that play, and watching them laugh and slap each other and laugh at each other and point at each other across the room. It is extraordinary. Or crying, or being, you know, truly moved. It is, I can't even begin to tell you the unbelievable experience it is to be able to share that with kids and know that their experience of Shakespeare is now changed for the rest of their lives because they had this experience at such a young age. It is extraordinary.
It should be pointed out, too, that, you know, the other thing that's so exciting is, you know, we do these plays, and when these high school kids come in, they sometimes are not studying that particular play in class, so they're just coming to see the play. My first Actors Renaissance season, we did Romeo and Juliet, as we mentioned mm-hmm. before, and I played Mercutio. He's a, you know, blustery, you know, funny guy who gets killed at the beginning of Act 3. And more often than not, you know, he'd get stabbed and you'd hear these gasps from the audience. And I was always surprised. I said, did you honestly not know that that was going to happen? This play is 400 years old. But they didn't.
Right.
You know, they're sitting there going, but you're the funniest thing going. Like, what's going to happen if you're dead? And that's exactly what the play is about. You know, it's like what really is going to happen now. And it's going to get very, very dark is what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it goes from a comedy to a tragedy quite quickly.
You know, that's, you know, I think that stuff is, you know, what a turn on that is.
Yeah, yeah. Watching the students watch these plays is an amazing thing. And we can watch the students watch them because the lights are on. And that gives Ben and Miriam, who are both incredibly good at using audience members throughout the play to bring them in. And by bringing one in, they're bringing the rest of the room along. And so that changes the experience for the kids, too. It's an important thing that a rock concert does as well.
One of my favorite things to do as Beatrice was to climb all over the little boys in the audience and give them smooches.
Pregnant lady, yeah.
Yes, this 8-month pregnant. Climbing onto a little 12-year-old boy's lap and giving him kisses.
It was,
I love it.
Well, you're 6-month-old Clark's mom now.
Yeah. How are you feeling about
primary,
that?
Primary job.
Right.
And that's preventing you from going back on stage anytime soon, I take it.
Well, I wouldn't say preventing me. I am making a choice that is a priority right now. Yes.
Do you
absolutely
miss it?
Sure, of course. Yeah.
What do you miss?
I miss singing. I miss the adrenaline rush of standing behind that door and the door to the stage and doing push-ups to sort of get some of that out of me. And I miss looking into the eyes of my scene partners and loving them or hating them or.
This is completely unfair. No idea I was going to ask you this, so you certainly didn't get a warning. We've got 60 seconds mm-hmm. left. Any chance you feel like singing now?
Oh, golly.
Wow.
I have a horrible head cold. I don't even know what I would sing.
Me either. I have some of my favorites, but those are usually duets and things.
I know.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well.
And Ben's, of course, a singer as well, and he's a singer in a band.
If you got any urge to break out in song, we got 30 seconds.
Oh, golly.
Ah.
Come with me, my love, to the sea of love. How's that?
That's yeah. perfect.
Yeah. You guys are rock stars.
Miriam sang with the band last night, in fact. They my did. Band played last night, and she came
What's
out
your
to
band
the show. Called? We are called Squintibus.
I put my baby to bed, and I ran down to the bar to join them.
Rock and roll and Shakespeare.
Sarah and Lo, 10 seconds to tell people what the Actors Renaissance season is at the Blackfriars Theater.
The Actors Renaissance season is one of the most exciting seasons that happens anywhere in the world because the actors run the show. It's their baby from beginning to finish, and they do it so well.
And it runs every year from
every year,
January to early April.
Mm-hmm.
Our guests have been professional Shakespearean actor Ben Kearns, former and hopefully soon to be again professional Shakespearean actor Miriam Burrows, current director of education at the American Shakespeare Center in Stanton, Virginia, Sarah Enloe, plus earlier in the program, the director of mission at that Shakespeare Center, Ralph Allen Cohen. Thank you so very much, all of you, for making time for us.
Thank you.
Virginia Insight's executive producers, Mac Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.